The 2020 general election is officially less than a year away. But with Nevada among the first states in the nation to caucus next year, candidates for the country's top job have been focusing heavily on the Silver State for several months. KUNR's Paul Boger spoke to Fred Locken, a political scientist with Truckee Meadows Community College, about where we are in the election process and what it all means for voters in Nevada.
Fred, you've followed politics in Nevada for several years now. You know, how have you seen presidential campaigns change in recent years?
Well, the change has been dramatic. If we go back to the beginning, I'm in my 29th year in the state of Nevada and came from the Midwest, where engagement and visibility was just greater. The states had larger populations, sort of closer to the flow of the traditional political mind. Coming out here, you were literally living on the edge. You would wave at the planes as they flew over to get to California. That state mattered. But we were a low count for electoral college votes. We didn't really have any players in Washington. I mean, they were decent. Reid was building it. So it's remarkable how it changed as Reid gained his role as a leader in the early 2000s. And then how he was able to parlay that into the change in the role that the Democratic Party played in Nevada for the national nomination. And that has been transformational. And we're only looking at several elections now where this has gone on. But we didn't see any of the candidates, and now we see them all repeatedly. And we've become this very important early state in the primary caucus season. We have been this bellwether state in terms of the battles over the U.S. Senate. And we had Harry Reid in this first minority, then majority, then minority leader role in the United States Senate, all of which just sort of allowed Nevada to flower as some relevant Western voice. And it's been amazing. I would not have ever forecast that happening, but it's been an amazing transformation in Nevada.
So what do you make of the presidential race so far? Or I guess I should say the Democratic nomination process so far.
Exactly, because it's a one-horse operation here this time around. The Republicans, the state of one of only four that has taken us out of the Republican cycle. I don't know that there's going to be much of a Republican cycle. There are some that are trying to challenge at that point, but Nevada is now completely irrelevant, whatever happens. For us, this is a very crazy year for the Democrats with really too many candidates. The National Party failed in not being able to do its role, which should have been to somehow structure and regulate that process. They've set up, I think, far too many debate events, and this prolonged reality of trying to get them to whether willow it down just becomes a fatigue factor. I think it was a fatigue factor for the Republicans. I already see it with the Democrats. We are so far away from decision-making yet. We're so far away from the November 2020 campaign that I think this is going to create problems for the party, not solve them. We want to live the mythology of democracy, but this has been at best organized chaos so far. But it's played out in Nevada as a result, because since we're one of the first four, we are seeing these candidates come in fairly large numbers and in repetitive visits. There's a real effort to get the ground game going. You know, Democrats are living the 2020 election right now. There are a lot of texts going on, a lot of phone calls. They're already doing walking to get people organized for commitments to the caucus vote. And I've actually done some of that walking. And I've got to tell you that what's really interesting is to hear what the people are saying, what the voters are saying, which is overwhelmingly a disgust for the caucus system. You know, the older the voter, the more they hate the caucus. And why did they ever do that to us? And you know, the 2016 caucus for the Democrats was a bit of a disaster here in Nevada. They're promising it's better. They're going to have early caucusing. That's if you want to avoid the bullies on caucus day. But some damage is being done there, which is sort of counterintuitive at this point, where you would assume the Democrats want all of these people on board looking at the most critical election in 2020. But there is a lot of frustration and cynicism at some of the processes that they've adopted in some of the – and now they're being badgered by phone calls and text messages and door visits. And we're still 3 months away from the caucus, and you know, well away from the fall campaign. So it's a two-edged sword where, you know, Nevada is not being ignored, But I think many Nevadans would kind of hope that some of this would go away. I don't think they're seeing a benefit from it. They're just seeing a process that has become so negative and so grueling is now that much more grueling. It's that much longer.
You know, like you said, we are at least 3 months away from the caucus. But one of the things I think is interesting is that Nevada is a notoriously difficult state to poll. To accurately poll, I should say. How do you think that affects the horse race nature of elections here?
Well, nobody really knows what's going on as a result. Nevada is challenging, but it's also in a way typical. The landlines going away, the way by which you can reach someone that answers a poll, because now you have, call screening and all kinds of factors. You're always calling them at the worst time of their day when they're trying to eat a meal. And so there's an interesting cynicism that has kind of built into the process. So I always take any of the data as a grain of salt. I had a rather major player in the state government tell me a year ago that he's so sick and tired of it when it comes in that he basically purposely lies about everything about him, his age, his income. He goes for the most outrageous kind of a candidate support just to screw with them. If you have somebody who's an insider, a player saying that, says a lot. And I think for parties, then, it's very frustrating because when they're starting out in this process for the Democrats, so many candidates, which is taking a finite pie of contributions and making it very thin. And so none of them really feel like they have enough money this time around. How you utilize your resources, what I'm seeing is just basically textbook. They're just trying to follow the script, which is a series of scripts. And hope that ground game magic is going to work again. Some are trying a little bit more edgier approach, maybe a little bit more new age. But for the most part, I think it's very frustrating for them. We don't know what's going to happen. And in a caucus, the process here of who's going to show up, who's going to participate. So I think it's very hard. And it's kind of funny because it's self-imposed. It's the parties that have put this process in place. They prefer the caucus over the primary. But there have been bills introduced in the state legislature. There was one again this last round. I think in 2021 we'll hopefully see a more serious push to get back at least to a primary. That just would work easier for the parties. That actually works a lot easier for those who want to come out and participate, and you actually do get better participation.
In that same vein, the fact that the Republicans aren't having a caucus or aren't having that primary contest here in Nevada this year or next year, does that disenfranchise maybe some Republican voters who aren't satisfied with the president and maybe want to have a different choice, or is this just he was going to be the candidate anyway, and therefore why waste the time and the money?
Well, I think the real political motivation was to disenfranchise any effort that would challenge the president's nomination for a second round. It's disingenuous in the party process, and I think there are a number of Republicans that don't agree with the decision of their state party on this issue. But the state party has lost a lot of its Republican base. It's living over in the nonpartisan. Anybody who is a moderate is no longer welcome in the state Republican Party, and so it's left the party. And so it's already disenfranchised because it would prefer to be seen as a Republican. They want to vote a more moderate brand, and they're not welcome. It's hard on those voters, and the simple reality is it in any kind of a situation, the textbook argument is that even within a party, even for an incumbent, it's good to have a challenge because it keeps it out in front of the cameras. It keeps the dialogue going. It keeps the interest maintained. Playing it safe, apparently is the current strategy of the Republican Party, really can come at a price. People separated from it, and what do they have to watch but only the Democratic side? It is possible for those who are not necessarily happy with the current incumbent to be attracted to some of the candidates that are running on the Democratic side, of seeing the other side of the coin. And we're seeing it in the national polls where Republican support for the president now, as of this morning, has dropped to 74% from 95%. And so I think that the toll of the conversation about impeachment and the way that this campaign is playing out, where the focus is clearly on the Democrats, where there is a contest going on, and a Republican president that's basically trying to fix it all the way to the fall election, is very apparent. And I think it does take some percentage of voters on the Republican side and make them say, why am I a Republican?
We're going into these primaries and into this election at the same time that Congress is taking on this impeachment inquiry into the president. Are there concerns? Should there be concerns from the Democrats that this impeachment process may backfire or may hurt their elections moving forward?
Well, Speaker of the House Pelosi would have told you exactly that. And I think that a lot of pundits look at it and say that she had the big picture. She carries the experience into this process. It's understandable from a Democratic Party point of view what might be very frustrating about this sitting president. But this process is now ripe with a lot of problems that could easily backfire on the Democrats. And the problem with that is it has implications not only for the presidential race of 2020, but how the Democrats perform in both the House and the Senate races, and even in the state races, because you have the census coming up in 2020 and the redrawing of lines in 2021. So this is one of those DECA elections coming up that has profound implications for each party. The Republicans played it very well in 2010 and have been reaping the benefits for the last decade. This would be the opportunity for the Democrats to turn around and use the same strategy. But if you're distracted with an impeachment process and this thing actually spills into the election year and you're already 20 votes short of what you need for conviction in the U.S. Senate, so you need a cataclysmic event to be able to switch Republican senators to vote against their sitting president. It could happen, but the odds on that are very low. And what we can draw from, because this is the only fourth event, but if you look at Bill Clinton's event, that backfired against the Republicans quite dramatically in a 1998 election. It was off year instead of main year this time away. But it literally, you saw an increase in the popularity of Clinton as a result of the impeachment process. It strengthened his role in that 1998 off-year election, and it bode very well for the Democrats. I mean, the Republicans paid a price for that. And I think that Pelosi and others, I saw that. But, you know, sometimes you always have to lead your party. And if your party starts going in another direction, you're either now irrelevant or you shuffle over and get back in front of it. So their commitment now is to move this quickly. And we're being told she's looking at the vote for impeachment to occur this month, and that would allow everyone's talking about a trial then that would occur in December, which at this point in time, it's a very difficult piece and the best of times to manage, and I think the Democrats are really struggling with getting this to where they want it to, and the Republicans are remaining very solid in their process, and it's hard to know. Nobody's really asking how the voters are reacting to this. This is all going to have consequences, I think, for both parties come November 2020. But it's really hard at this point to know what they're going to be.
What do these candidates, these Democrats at the very least, need to do to attract voters here in the state? You know, we hear so much about this moderate progressive divide. Is that divide existent in Nevada right now? And what do they need to do to attract those voters?
Well, it's there. And the moderate voice of the Democratic Party is in distress. It's, you know, the standard bearers are possibly seen as either older than they should be, a need for a generational shift in the leadership of the Democratic Party is one argument that you hear out there. You have incredible enthusiasm and energy on the progressive level that has really tapped into technology perhaps more than a more traditional campaign. And so you saw Bernie Sanders' success in 2016. There's replication of that. Really, the story this year at this point in time would be Elizabeth Warren's campaign, which has been, I think, amazing in its enthusiasm. Not so much for Bernie this time around, but you know he's going to try to change that in the next several months. But you have many of these candidates that just get no traction whatsoever. Whatever they're doing, whatever money they're either not providing or the strategies that they're not using. Of all of the candidates that we have operating in Nevada, I would say only about four of them are getting much traction. And the others, even if we had accurate poll data, I think the poll data would tell me that they're just not getting enough traction. And so this is probably playing out in the other state primary and caucus systems for the Democrats as well. It's very hard for those that have been wallowing at less than 1% in national polls to make any dent and really move up. And what we are seeing are someone like Elizabeth Warren and even to some extent Bernie Sanders starting to already move in places like Iowa and New Hampshire. They're looking at Nevada. The real story, as we all know, is that Biden has slipped dramatically in all of those states. Now in money problems nationally, does he have the organization? Does he have the enthusiasm amongst his voters to make it happen? But with the Democrats, if you get a bunch of them in a room, I mean, they're very unhappy with this sitting president. So the Democratic Party has a wonderful grassroots enthusiasm and interest. But with so many candidates, it's really frayed. There's no focus to it. Everybody has their one issue. And it's going to be the challenge for the Democratic Party to pull that under an umbrella that pulls enough together for the fall. And it's people have commented about Warren that she will shift her position on her health care plan as soon as she has a nomination, because it wouldn't win in the fall. It wouldn't be easy to defend from an affordability point of view. But she has to be very liberal right now because of the bias in the party for the primary caucus season, and then has to moderate those views to be able to appeal to the voters who don't pay attention at all to this phase and will be showing up and deciding who the next president of the United States will be. And this is the game that we sadly put our candidates through. But I think Nevada is a litmus test. I think Harry Reid did a brilliant thing by putting us in the cycle where we are. We speak for the West. We know that our own poll data is pretty accurate. Healthcare, the immigration issue, climate change, these are issues that are very important to Nevadans, and they are very important to the West. And so we have that opportunity to make all of those candidates focus on that. Different issues perhaps in Iowa, different issues in New Hampshire or South Carolina. So we carry our own special responsibility. And I think that that Democrats in Nevada are very strong on how they feel about those issues, and they'll be looking for the candidates that fit.
A little closer to home, we're not just voting on president next year. Nevadans will be voting on Congress as well, several local races. Is there any particular race that you're looking at?
Well, I come from Wisconsin originally. I grew up with same day registration. I love the fear factor in what works perfectly well. We don't have a problem in America of voter fraud. We have a problem in America of people not voting. We're 46th in the nation in voter turnout. And same-day registration helps because the University of Michigan for years has told us, based on their research data, that the average American decides to vote in a national election about 7 to 10 days out from the election day. Historically, registration's already been shut down. We're already looking at early voting, and so that necessarily pushed registration further back. So this is a sort of a liberating move that it will really bring, I think, more people potentially to the polls. Many of them, don't focus about the issues of voting, but if the issues are churning well in October, we could see a wonderful increase in voter participation. From a political science pundit point of view, it's difficult because I've always looked at voter registrations to let me know what's happening. And with this wild card that's been brought into our world, all bets are now off in that regard of using that data. But the data is already telling for us a year out, the Democrats are already so far ahead in registrations in the state of Nevada that for any of the races, these are really focused on the state assembly and state senate and on those congressional seats. We have no Senate seats up. And I would say that right now, a year out, it's looking extremely well for the Democratic Party in all regards, just because they're already so far ahead in registrations before they put their machine in place on the ground to build registrations. I think we're going to see a record gap in Democrat to Republican registrations in the state. And then they have, especially in Clark County and to some extent in Washoe County, a good get-out-the-vote process that will sort of galvanize that to make a difference on election day. In all of that, then, I think puts all of those races, some of those races that we thought, well, they're kind of designed to be toss-up. But I think we became a blue state in the 2018 election. We were going blue in 2016. All of the registration data and demographics of the people who are moving in the state suggest that that momentum continues. So I think we're in the process of joining the left coast, and I would anticipate the 2020 election to affirm that, which means that I'd be very surprised if there was a Democratic upset in terms of losing any of the Democratic seats they have, that a Republican could pull that off. And that's before we even know the candidates that are put into the mix. But I think this is an emerging juggernaut in the state of Nevada, and I would expect to see it play out in the 2020 election. So that means that they hang on to their two-thirds majority in the state assembly and possibly increase upon it, that they pick up that random seat that's left to actually have a two-thirds majority in the state Senate, which positions the Democratic Party in 2021 for the redrawing of lines very favorable to the Democrats. And the Republicans are sounding that alarm. I've been in where they're saying, you know, if you don't show up in 2020, it's going to have real consequences. But they have an enthusiasm gap on the Republican side at this point in time, and that always has that sort of adjacent or trickle-down impact at the state level. And I think that that's going to be very present in 2020.
So is CD2 up for grabs?
I think it's been narrowing. The personality of CD2 has been changing. It was designed to be a Republican, so it's always an uphill battle for any Democrat that's running in it. In that case, it does depend on who the candidate is and what support the party is going to be willing to give it. The vulnerability of CD2 is if the Democrats get this type of majority in the 2021 legislature, that those lines potentially could be withdrawn if they have a solid grip on state government. That would happen, and then where there's a possibility of a fifth congressional district now for Nevada, and the decision by Congress after the DECA census often is to look at our growth pattern and predictions, and we're predicted to be 4 million by 2030. So with that kind of growth, they are more inclined to give us that fifth seat early as opposed to waiting for it and giving it on the other side, and that would be another one redrawn to fit into southern Nevada, as you can imagine. So it's so hard to cram every one of those down there. But that's where the power base in the state is now. So CD2 would necessarily have to change in terms of what its current boundaries are, and that would open the door to changing it from a Republican-dominant district.
Fred Locken is a professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College. Fred, thanks so much.
Thank you, Paul.
That was senior political reporter Paul Boger. You can find all of our election coverage online at KUNR.org.